There's no system that has been devised that doesn't devolve into a dictatorship.
Human rights, what are those?
Powered by slavery, piously.
We have to protect democracy to protect us from fascism, and it's like, how do you think fascism happened?
Philosophers. I realize I've never actually looked right into my microphone into the intro before. Hope it doesn't sound too different.
It does.
Oh. Well, what are we talking about today, David?
I was half expecting you to just start over.
I actually like the video gag or the audio gag where someone's like, we can just cut that out, right? Yeah, we can cut that out, but they leave it in the recording.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a fun little bit of meta comedy.
Yes. So you had a topic.
I did. Yes. Okay, now I remember I was the one who came up with the topic today and ran it by you. Okay, so initially I was thinking about, well, how do we begin this? We'll go back to the beginning. So I was watching another great YouTube channel, which if you don't listen to this show for any other reason, for some really good YouTube recommendations.
Yes.
Understandable. Well, that should be a segment, our YouTube recommendation of the
YouTube
day.
YouTube recommendations of the week.
Exactly. Yes. And we have a little jingle that plays.
But it's just going to be the same five channels over and over.
Maybe.
Because they're the best ones.
Well, we pick up new channels every now and again, but I don't think we pick up a new one each week.
I don't pick up a new one each week, and most of the channels that I pick up are not relevant to this show. But sometimes, there's one that's very special.
Yeah. Well, I see, and that's how we get our new topics.
Welcome to this week's episode, the Philosopher's YouTube channel tier list.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's going to be a thing now.
No, it's not.
All right, guys, if this video gets 50,000 likes, if we reach 1 million subscribers, okay, have you seen some of those where people make those insane promises where it's if I ever get 1 million whatever subs,
I'll turn myself into a jet ski or something ridiculous that's impossible,
and then they do it eventually. Yes. And then someone's there's that one guy who remembers it from forever ago.
Yes.
Which by that I mean the guy who binged all that person's content up to now and is well
wait a minute
now.
Did you ever do this? No.
Yeah, all right, buddy boy, let's become a jet ski already. So anyway, great YouTube channel, Historia Civilis. I think we've talked about that channel before.
Yes, I think we talked about that channel and mentioned Charles I, probably.
Yes.
That seems like an appropriate thing.
Yes. If you've never checked him out, highly recommend, especially if you're a history buff, but you don't if you like history or if you like stories about real things that happen told in a very easy to visually understand way using simple structures.
Or visually animated historical battle scenes. Those are very fun.
Yes, yes, they are. His largest series to date is on Rome. I think that's kind of the whole reason he started the channel.
Which, incidentally, is the longest series in history.
Yeah. The longest continuous series.
I guess, except for China, maybe. But
maybe.
That's also broken up into pieces, so that doesn't really count.
True.
They just all called themselves China, but they're really different.
Yeah. Same thing with the Romans, though. Do Byzantines count? Well, depends.
There's a reason we gave them a different name. Yeah.
Fair. Which just goes to show, naming things is important. But he was doing a video talking about the Roman political, during the Republic, the Roman Republic political system, which I have to say because they were a monarchy before then.
Mm-hmm.
Most people know Rome as being a republic, but they were a monarchy for a non-insignificant period of time before then. And it got me to thinking about other things that people talk about in all throughout history when it comes to politics. And it's there's this balancing act with any nation that is not a monarchy or not an absolute authoritarian regime, which people will argue that the monarchy is not authoritarian because God, but that's also authoritarian.
God is authoritarian, by the way. Yeah.
Right. But there's this balancing act for every governmental system that's not that is trying to balance between some form of absolute authoritarianism and essentially anarchy. because that's the other right. extreme.
You're trying to get the benefits of having power, centralized power, without the downside of having one guy in charge who just, you know, abuses everybody.
Right. Tyranny.
Right.
Which, I guess, fun fact of the day. Did you know that's a word that doesn't appear in the King James Version of the Bible?
Tyranny?
Mm?
That doesn't surprise me.
It was specifically requested to be removed by King James.
That is very appropriate.
So, there you go. Other reasons why you should get rid of the monarchy. I've been seeing a lot of remove the monarchy content lately. I guess our friends across the pond are trying to get caught up, but we'll see.
Yeah, okay. Quick tangent about the British monarchy.
Which is actually on topic today.
Well, it is on topic, but it's also off topic because it's a current event thing, kind of.
Oh, fair enough.
But anyway, whatever. I have a hypothesis about the current opinions about the monarchy.
Hmm.
So, Queen Elizabeth II, my hypothesis is that she lived for so long that to basically all, well, not just UK citizens, to the world, she was a fact of life that was never going away. She was immortal.
Right.
And after she died, and, you know, I think the initial thought was, oh no, it's over. But then it's like, no, there's a whole system in place. There's another one we decided.
Mm-hmm.
And we're calling him Charles this time. And then people are like, oh yeah, that's right. That is still the system, isn't it? Hmm. Like, it reminded people that this unjust institution exists and made them think about removing it.
I also think, given our modern political climate, the fact that we've been saying Her Majesty's whatever for mm-hmm. so long, all of a sudden everywhere is being replaced with His Majesty,
yes.
The king. Like, king has a different ring to it than queen for some reason in people's minds.
Well, because, yeah, women are gentler in the mind of the West anyway.
Yes.
Now that there's a king, you're reminded, oh yeah, these are the same thing. Queens and kings are the same thing.
Yeah, literally the same.
And yeah, and when you say the king, it sounds old-fashioned, as it should.
Yeah, and a lot of the, and there have just been more kings throughout history, so there are more examples of tyranny, mm-hmm. even though there have been plenty of examples of actual tyranny committed by queens.
Oh, sure.
They're just, none jump to mind as easy.
Well, there's the infamous Bloody Mary.
There is, but like, that's once is a once is like, you know, a happenstance coincidence. Even though it isn't.
Well, I'm not trying to establish the pattern that queens are
just as bad as kings, even though the institution is what we should care about.
The institution, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I know we're not, but you got to remember, a lot of people look at it fairly narrowly, I think, and it was even seen, I think, as a source of pride for a lot of people for a long time. Like, even Margaret Thatcher, as much as she's hated by the same people that hold the modern opinions that would unfairly be biased towards a queen over a king, it's still looked at with, like, she shows up in lists not because of what she did, but because that she was a woman and also did those things by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a conservative male politician had done the exact same things, he would be looked back on as like a tyrant or, you know, a terrible person who hurt people. But she was a strong female politician. That's how a lot of people kind of characterize her. You know, same thing with the queen, you know, well, the former queen. Which, anyway, not important. But yeah, so people are noticing it. And why do they even care? Well, because at the same, I think the summary of, like, that ties this back to our topic is that people who want to abolish the monarchy are seeing essentially a contradictory statement that you shouldn't care about the monarchy. It's not that big a deal. They're just mostly irrelevant. But you should also care about it enough to think that this is a big deal because they are significant. And both of those things cannot be true.
Yes, I have noticed that dualism in the meme sphere around the British monarchy.
Yeah. It's like they hold practically no political
power.
Like,
anytime someone challenges them, they're like, they're irrelevant anyway. They don't have any real power. What are you so worried about? And then ask why we should keep them. Oh, well, they're so very important to the structure of our government. It's like, so which is it? Are they important or are they irrelevant? Yeah.
Exactly. So the way that ties back into our topic today is pretty much all non-authoritarian regimes or governments, well, yeah, all non-those things, are trying not to be those things while also not falling into anarchy, because that's also seen as bad, because it's usually the, I forget his name, John something though, some philosopher, Leviathan.
There have been a few of those.
He wrote the Leviathan.
I know that book. I don't remember which John it was.
Yeah, it's not Locke. It's the other one, I think. It may be Tom. Anyway, I don't know.
Maybe. You know what? If only we had the wealth of human knowledge.
It's Thomas Hobbes.
Thomas Hobbes. Yeah, well. Yeah,
that's Thomas Hobbes.
Yeah. That...
Okay. Hey, you know what? I came up with it without having to look it up. So Thomas Hobbes, you know, the Leviathan, he essentially, his idea of the anarchic natural state of man is kind of the natural state of mankind that everyone thinks about when they think of anarchy. It's terrible, awful, no one can achieve anything because we're constantly killing each other over food, right? So you either have that or you have one person killing some of us for not food or other reasons. Maybe food, doesn't matter. And it's very interesting to see all of the strategies that people concoct in their governments to stay on that narrow path. And also to see all of the conversations that go on around it, because pretty much anytime any government does anything, one group will say, it doesn't matter who, right? The roles can flip. This is leading us down a path towards tyranny. And there's tons of examples of, like, you know, I paid a lot more attention to American history, being an American, than other world histories growing up. But yeah, there are tons of examples from the founding fathers. And because we were born out of literal tyranny, like, that was the reason, even though back then tyranny was 2% taxes. I wish that was
2% taxes on, like, one specific good.
Yeah.
And now you pay 30% taxes on every dollar you make.
Yeah, I know. I wish we had the same standards for tyranny as we did back then. But that's... that aside, you know, lamenting that, you know, there were tons of commentary about, you know, like the famous quote, Benjamin Franklin, you have a republic if you can keep it. Like, there's all the, even they acknowledged that tyranny,
all this stuff is precarious. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so easy to end up in a, I'm going to call it a dictatorship just because that is the pretty much what an authoritarian regime is. It's just a person who is in charge that can tell everyone else what to do and is above the law.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a monarchy.
Or is the law.
Is the law. That essentially is a monarchy. I know some monarch apologists out there will be like, well, technically the monarch has to follow the rule of the church. Yeah. Are they also the head of the church? Cool. Then it's a dictatorship.
Yeah.
I.e. looking at you, literally Britain. Although not that much better when you look at the practical examples through history of exactly how that even became a thing. Henry VIII wanting to get a divorce. Catholic Church said no. And he said, lol, well, I'll make my own Catholic Church.
I'll make my own church with black jack and hookers.
And he did just that. Because he could. So I guess the first thing is, why is that the... You know, if we're standing on the hill of neither of these things, and on one side of the hill we have authoritarian dictatorships, on the other half we have pure anarchy. Why is one particular scheme of government even the default setting opposed to anarchy? I think that's the first question we should ask ourselves. Why is that inevitable of what we're trying to avoid? And it is. It doesn't matter how you try to get around it. You know, all the people out there saying not real communism, that's because it ended up as a dictatorship every time. Every single time it was tried, dictatorship. Most democracies that are no longer democracies divulged back down to some form of dictatorship. You know, doesn't matter what system you've had. There's no system that has been devised that doesn't devolve into a dictatorship, or has not had at least one example that has devolved back to a dictatorship, except for those that are currently existing and haven't been around that long. Realistically, when you look at the vast course of human history, you know, 200 years is nothing. When you consider the Roman Empire lasted for over 1,000, you know, we mentioned the Chinese dynasties, over 1,000 years or more. So insignificant almost in the pale of human history. So why is that the default? I think we should start there and then talk about how some of the strategies governments try to use to avoid it and how they're exploited to get to that point.
I think, well, it's different for each other type of government, right? Because each type of government has its own weaknesses that lead down the path to tyranny.
I know that, but why do we go to dictatorship? Why is that the other end of the inevitable spectrum from anarchy?
Well, it's obviously the other end of the spectrum from anarchy, which is total self-control versus a dictatorship, which is one person has control over everyone. But as for like why systems devolve into it, I think it's because, well, there are multiple reasons. One is a dictatorship is the easiest form of authority to understand. And as long as somebody like, and there are many ways by which a dictator can rise to power. That I guess that's what I was getting at by saying it depends on what kind of society you're already in.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously a dictator could take control by somehow gathering an army, either with money or, with some other type of ideological influence. You could be like Germany in the 30s.
I'm a popular dictator.
Exactly. And just be an elected dictator. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or Caesar.
Or Caesar. Yeah.
Same thing. Yep. And I think the other reason it's that way is because you cannot say that a dictatorship is not effective. It's just effective at what? You know, that's the question. And there are even people out there, I think, who actually advocate for a dictatorship because of you could roll the dice and get a benevolent one. Arguably.
I think there's that, but I think also, well, especially, this is especially the case in democratic societies. People are very selfish, and everyone kind of wishes that they had control over the whole system. But with the constant cycle of a republic or a democracy or you know, any system like that, you know, it's like, okay, here comes the next election. Let's see whose team wins this time. But if we roll the dice with a dictator, I could have my way for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Right. As long as we get a dictator that agrees with my worldview or close enough, then I just win and I don't have to worry about all this election BS.
Right. And there's also a actual person you can blame for problems. Like, and that's an interesting
thing. That's the one good thing about dictatorships.
Yeah.
Which we've talked about before on the show is, you know, whose head to cut off when things go wrong. Yes.
Yep. Instead of an office that cycles through people all the time.
And avoids blame.
By
like a corporation, because it is a corporation.
Literally, yeah. Even some monarchies are corporations.
Yes.
See the Catholic Church. But, okay, so that being some of the reasons, let's start talking about some examples of, like, how you get there, and maybe some of the strategies that have been tried in the past to avoid it. I'm obviously wanting to start with Rome, because that's the one that I've watched most recently. And without going too deep into it, if you want an understanding of the Roman Republic political system, again, Historia Civilis, check them out, it's great. But in a nutshell, I think the biggest misconception a lot of people have about the Roman Senate is that the Senate was just like a fixed number body of people, like the American Senate, but it was not. There's actually no limit on the number of people that can be in the Senate at one given time.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they just added so many people a year to the Senate. It was lifetime.
Yeah, yeah. Once you're a senator, you're a senator.
Forever. Yeah, until you die. And they would add like so many new senators to the Senate a year. I think it was like 4 originally, and then it got as high as like 8 or 24. Like there's a fixed number that grew with time. And then you moved up from there. Elections happened every year, and every election for every office happened every year. So everybody that was in the Senate, like everyone I'm going to talk about above, you know, just your average senator, which was called a quaestor, they're all just senators with additional responsibilities, much in the same way that a Catholic cardinal is just a bishop with a fancy hat.
And wears red.
And he has a special duty, but he's also a bishop. It's not like he runs bishops. He still runs a larger church like a bishop would, but He is a bishop, technically. Just a special bishop. So you have all the quaestors, which are just senators, essentially. And then you have the four new that get elected, or eight, or however many. At the same time, some people who are quaestors can become praetors, which are judges, which essentially are like kings. That's another thing, too, that judges back in the day were very revered because they essentially had the power to decide life and death like a king did. You would elect so many of those, but they were elected from the pool of either quaestors or aediles, which all an aedile is essentially a glorified accountant that's also a senator. Like, they did a lot of the extra stuff. I'm greatly oversimplifying it. But then at the top of this whole system, you have the consuls, and there's always two. And these are essentially like a combination of president, so executive, and prime minister, head of the legislative body, which was the Senate. And there was always two of them. And they were elected, and they served for 1 year. And then elections happened next year. And it was the highest office you could hold in Roman political life. But you were by no means unilaterally. You could not just make law. You still had to, you could propose law, you could direct the Senate, and you were in charge of all military activities. And it's kind of funny how they balance this. There's an obvious reason why they don't just have one. Well, now you have one person that's unchecked, or only checked by the Senate body. Now you have two.
And the Senate can't beat your army, so...
Right, but if there's two of you...
But if there's two people that the army answers to, then...
Which, weirdly, in the way this worked, because most people are like, how do you... I think it's funny, quick tangent, people love to criticize a system in which there are two leaders, even though that's literally the Roman Republic for the vast majority of its history. Well, I say vast, maybe not.
For the best majority of its history.
For the best majority of its history. That's exactly how it was, actually. So you got two consuls. Well, who's actually in charge, though? Well, they switched. Every month, one of them would be in charge of the Senate, and the other would sit back and wait. And they would still get to vote and everything like everyone
else.
Was it
every month, or was it half the year? I thought it was half the year.
It's every month. They would switch back and forth. I watched it today. And then when they're on military campaign, because this is another weird thing about the Roman system.
The military. I'm thinking of fascis. Sorry.
No, fascis would change every month. Yeah. Yeah, look it up.
Look it up.
It goes back
and forth. Well, I guess I'm watching Historia Civilis this weekend.
Yeah. But don't get me wrong. At some point, they may have done it 6 and 6. But, like, originally, it was supposed to go back and forth each month. Which is interesting, because it's like, oh, I get my political agenda for a month. And then, oh, now it's their turn to run the political agenda. They were also, being the heads of the military, generals. Because in the Roman political system, a good politician was a good general, and vice versa. Like, they just saw the two as being of equal skill, which I kind of get. That does kind of make sense, because when you really think about what it meant to be a military leader at that time, you have to have the charisma to get a bunch of people to go die for you, or be willing to die for you, possibly. Now, don't get me wrong, you're still paying them somehow, even if it's with spoils.
Spoils or promises. A lot of the time.
But even then.
That's what requires the charisma, is getting people to believe your promise. Yeah.
Yeah. And not much has changed in political history since today, since that's what that's the same thing politicians get elected on today. Promises.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can just convince enough people that you're not lying, good enough. We'll vote for them, you know? And when they were on campaign, they would switch back and forth every day. So that way, if for some reason the army is marching against its own country, well, every other day it's switching to the other guy. So they have to be in collusion to make that happen. But why would they be in collusion when which one of them is going to get to be the dictator? Well, now you have two people that would vie for the same thing, that have another person of equal power also trying to achieve the same thing, and they keep each other in check in that way. Which is kind of weird to think about, but it worked for a long time. The other thing that they did is that the Romans acknowledged that there is a time, because this is, I think, one of the other ways in which democracies in particular devolve into power, or any system of government that relies, that there's a long lag time when decision-making comes into play. And obviously, the more people you involve in making a decision, the longer it takes to make that decision. And everyone also get an equal say to make their point, right? That's not great for war or times when you need to make decisions quickly, right? So how do you deal with that? Well, most, in the Roman system, they literally had, they just acknowledged that, yeah, we'll just have a dictator then. We will literally just make that a thing that can happen. And we're going to give you all the power you need to be a dictator for some period of time.
I don't remember the period, but yeah.
It was either like, it was 60 something. It was either 6 months or 60 days or something like that. It was a not short, insignificant period of time. But also, you're giving someone all of the power. Like, yeah. No one can make them stop. So I think even back then, everybody knew it could theoretically be forever. And if you look at like the historical examples of when people were given that power, everyone still like watched it to see if it was actually going to go the way it was supposed to, because there's no reason it had to, except for the faith and goodness of the person you just made the dictator. And I forget the guy's name, but there was a guy who essentially was called up to be a dictator multiple times and gave it back multiple times. And like, he's well known in history for that, even though I forget his name now. It's like, what are you known for in history? Oh, being a dictator, being made a dictator, and then giving it up. Like, that's one of the reasons George Washington was so beloved in the United States. It's not that he was just the first. It's that he could have been king.
And chose not to be, yeah.
Yeah, there were people actually wanting him to be king. Because, you know, a lot of the people in the colonies were so used to having a monarch for so long. That the fact that when, you know, he ran for two terms of office and stopped, that was shocking to people, because mm-hmm. he didn't have to. And it's the precedent to why we even made that a law later on, because it wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't a law for a long time. Then when we decided, how many should it be? Well, let's do how many George Washington did.
Yeah, we're going to honor that choice, you know, because FDR was trying to go...
It might have been one if George Washington only did one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that the Roman decision to just put it on the table and acknowledge that, yeah, someone at some point in time is going to want to be we're going to need a dictator, or enough people are going to feel like we need to have that. So let's just put it on the table as an option. We will create a legal pathway to that and set it out there. And you run a risk doing that, but I think it paid off, because by creating a pathway to that, what you ended up not having was people being able to easily subvert to that point. Like, no one had to argue that they needed to create a law to just make the consul more powerful than necessary. There already was a law for that.
Right, you could become dictator if circumstances were dire enough, but now you have to prove to everyone that the circumstances are dire enough to do that.
Right. And I think that's really neat, because instead of it being a power creep, which, don't be wrong, it inevitably
there still happened. Was power creep, yeah.
But when you look at how long it took for the power to creep, I think it was like maybe 300 or 400 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long time before it finally broke down. It's pretty impressive, you know. But the obvious risk is that, yeah, we wouldn't have put this here if we weren't supposed to use it. Come on, just give me the power to do it, please. I'll give it back, I swear.
Mm-hmm. Honest.
Now, the other interesting thing is that the dictatorship did not have to be a consul. That's the other thing, too. It could be anybody. Which is kind of neat. It keeps you from positioning yourself into a place where it's like you're the obvious dictator that they would need, or legally you have to become the dictator, and then putting the, you know.
Right. No, actually, we can just choose this other guy.
Because we trust him.
We could choose your rival because you're the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that if you look at a lot of the reasons that, I mean, you know, Greece gets a lot of credit for being a democracy. But if you really look at a lot of political systems, they're not based on Greece.
Mm-hmm.
They're based on Rome.
Yeah, Rome did it. Yep.
Rome did it. And Rome was not like Greece. Like, they copied a lot of stuff from the Greeks. But this wasn't one of them. They modified the crap out of it. I mean, I guess we can talk about that one way that we always seem to devolve into democracy. Security. Or devolve into democracy. Devolve into a dictatorship. Security. That, I think, is like the biggest excuse that most people give as to why they need to be a dictator.
I'll keep you all safe.
I'll keep you safe. I might have been the one that scared you, but
I'll be the only one.
I'll be the only one. Yeah. I mean, there are just countless examples of that happening.
Mm-hmm.
Fictional and real, you know? And I think that's probably the easiest way that democracies devolve into dictatorships is just out of a need to feel secure. And I guess
what's that's how all, not even dictatorships, but all, overreaches of authority. I mean, classic, more recent example, Japanese internment camps in the United States.
Yep.
Human rights, what are those?
We're at war.
Yeah, we're at war. The people are scared. Get in this box, please.
Yeah.
But
I'm an American.
Well, we'll decide that after the war. Get in the fence. Yeah.
get inside the fence. Yeah. I mean, if you talk to anybody in the privacy space, you know, look at what the U.S. government did after 9/11.
Sure.
The United States was just very, very different before then. And unfortunately, we're getting to the point now where about half the people probably at this point that are alive in the United States that are citizens that have been here, half of them were born after that. Maybe.
Half? That seems like a lot.
Well, I mean, populations grow.
Yeah.
I would have to do the numbers, but a half to a third were born.
Definitely a sizable fraction, yeah.
Yeah. How about this? I would say that a half do not remember life before 9/11.
Hmm.
Or they weren't adults enough. Like, they didn't function in society. Like, because I don't count people born in the year 2001. I mean, like, people born in the 90s that were like 10 or 11, did they really remember what, you know, flying was like before the TSA? Like, do they, you know?
Hold on. I'm getting stats.
Getting the stats.
The stats.
Because I would say it's not just people born. I would have to put the cutoff date. Let's just make it like 16, like the earliest time when you start getting new legal rights, like being able to getting a driver's license or something like that. So 16 years before 2011 or 2001, that'd be 85.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What percentage of the living population in the United States was born after 1985?
Yeah, okay. It is like close to half.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah, half of them don't remember any of the, I'll call them liberties, but, you know, the liberties you had before the things like the Department of Homeland Security, mm-hmm, was a thing, you know, government surveillance, all those other things. So there's just another example. I mean, Canada recently, anytime I see legislation with the words emergency powers, I cringe.
Well, yeah, that's just that is code for tyranny. Yeah.
Yeah. But why don't you just call it a dictator?
Because that's scary.
Well, it should be. And it is.
Because it admits what you're doing. That's the thing.
Sure. Well, don't get me wrong. I feel like also the word dictator probably didn't have the same connotation back then as it does now, because it was a new word maybe then. Like, it actually had a meaning.
I mean, yeah. Well, and they also hadn't experienced the dictators that we think of when we think of dictators today.
Yeah, they had experienced monarchs, which were different.
Right.
Well, even though they're practically
not really, but yes.
Yeah.
Well, this whole republic thing was relatively new.
Yeah. Revolutionary, arguably.
Well, not until later.
So, I think this is also what a lot of people allude to when they talk about the tyranny of the masses. Although, it's not... I don't know. It's the fact that you can vote for these things. Like, we'd already mentioned the Hitler example before.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that we don't have to bleep that word because we're talking about historical context. But it's like,
not a word, but anyway.
Oh, whatever. Because that guy was elected.
Yes.
People wanted that, you know. And I think that's like the biggest...
embarrassing as that might be. Yeah.
And that's like one of the hardest things. Like when I talk to people who are like diehard democracy people that are like... that...
we have to protect democracy to protect us from fascism. And it's like, how do you think fascism happened?
Literally democracy. Yeah. And they always argue that, well, you know, the vast majority of Germans weren't Nazis at the time.
How do you think they got in power? Well, they didn't fight a revolution.
Well,
was violence, but
they were a minority and they bullied people into it.
No.
No. And that, I think the key point is...
they fooled people.
Sure.
Like, I can get on board with the idea that, okay, yeah, most Germans were not on board with a genocide of the Jews, right?
It didn't start there, though.
That's not where it started, though. That's the thing, yeah. That happened only after it was too late.
Also, you got to remember, it's not about whether or not 51% of all of the people want it. It's a matter of whether or not 51% of all the politically engaged people want it.
True.
Which, that's also one of the biggest problems with democratic systems that give everyone a right
to
vote.
Getting people to even participate, yeah.
Yeah, most people don't care. Most people want to be left alone and just... they want life to stay the same. The only people that vote are people who want something.
Mm-hmm.
They either want things to stay the same and they feel like it's not going to, i.e. conservatives,
mm-hmm.
or they feel like there's a problem now and the only way to fix it is the government.
So we're going to vote to change
progressives,
it.
Yeah. But that's not most people. Most people are content with where things are. Or they're content enough, right? You may ask them, and they may have a preference, but they're not willing to do what it takes to be a part of the democratic system, which is also why some of the most diehard Democrat, like when I say Democrat, I mean people in support of democracies, they're so adamant about policies that make it super easy to participate, which on the face of it sounds like a good thing to anyone who has been raised in the modern world and taught that democracy is like the only way that's morally correct to do governance. Or they're in favor of things that are kind of radical, like compulsory participation, which yes. is kind of hilarious that even continued to exist. Like, I think Australia has that.
Australia has it.
You're required by law to vote.
Yes.
Which I think is funny.
I don't know if this is how it is in Australia. There's another place that I know of, and I can't remember which country it is, but has compulsory voting. But you don't actually have to put anything on the ballot, right? You can just turn it. You just have to show up. You have to prove that you were there for the election.
I hate that.
Yeah.
The only compulsory, and I'm going to put air quotes around compulsory voting, I would be okay with is no. It's not 51% of the people who vote have to be in favor of the policy changing.
51% of the people have to be in favor of the policy. And if you can't get anyone to show up to the polls, obviously it's not that important and we don't need it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the only time when I'm like, oh yeah, everybody should have to vote. Should have to vote for something to happen.
Not you should make them vote. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I would even be okay with making them vote if that was what the result you had to get was. In a way, because I can also imagine, it's wild to me to think that, like, think about it like this. In Australia, right, they made it a law that you have to vote. How was there not immediately a referendum, and the first thing that everyone had to vote on was whether or not everyone has to vote? Because if not enough people were showing up to vote, then why did they vote to keep it? Why didn't they just vote it out then? You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to make me be here by law...
Well, because the people who are required to show up and vote aren't the people who decide what goes on the ballot.
That's a problem. It's also a problem with democracy. What good is everyone having a vote if not everyone has an equal say to what they're even voting on? Which I hear the same people who also scream about how good democracy is, how inefficient that would be. Well, yeah, so is democracy.
Right.
So if you're going to do that, buy in.
You know what's really efficient? A dictator, yeah.
Yeah.
They could just get stuff done.
Exactly. You know? But, I don't know. It's just baffling to me. Like, don't get me wrong. Would I rather live in a democracy than a dictatorship? Probably. 95 to 99% of the time, yes. But it also kind of depends, actually. I've thought about it. You know, there are actually circumstances, depending on the dictator, where I'd be like, no, I'm cool with that. I'll give you an example. I was listening to this guy. He lives in South Africa. Now, South Africa is a democracy. It's not a dictatorship. But it has a lot of the same features that dictatorships have. You know what dictatorships also allow for a lot of? Corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people look at corruption and say corruption is bad. But why? Why do they think corruption is bad, David?
Because then we don't get what we want. We get what someone else wants.
Is that really why?
Mm.
Or is it because it's kind of unfair? And it favors...
Well, I guess that is kind of what I meant, yeah.
And it favors a certain kind of person.
Yeah, I guess that's sort of what I meant, but yes.
Yeah.
It's unfair. Rich people can control the government. And yes, and it caters to the kind of person who will do anything for money.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of the reason people want a democracy is because it makes us all, air quotes, equal. Even right. though we also then continue to let wealthy people buy elections by funding them with ads. But that's neither here nor there. You know, it's just...
Never mind the fact that the reason that that even works is that people are very influenced by ads instead of actually thinking for themselves. But that's a topic for another time.
A topic for another time. Yeah. But this guy was talking about living in South Africa. And this guy's kind of a big gun guy. I won't say who he is necessarily, maybe, but... You could probably put two and two together and figure it out if you tried hard enough. But the reason he likes living in South Africa is because corruption is so widespread that corruption is accessible to most people.
Mm.
It's great.
You don't have to be rich to
corrupt the police.
Yes.
Yep. It is so corrupt and inefficient that if you just got like $20, you can just do whatever you were going to do anyway. And the cops are just going to let you do it. And in that way, he's like, well, I live in a country most of the time that has some of the worst corruption. I have never been more free. And I can do whatever I want. Because it's cheaper to go bribe the police and the people with guns there than it is to pay all the taxes and stuff here to just do what I want. And it doesn't matter what the government does. They can levy the largest taxes on me. Well, that's not going to go into the arms of the police. So I just pay the police.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you fix that? Pay the police more? Sounds like a very quick way to get a dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
Really well-armed police state that, unless they're ideologically motivated, you know? So I always thought that was very interesting. So if
That is a very interesting take, yeah.
Yeah. So if I could live in a dictatorship where I'm above the accessibility of... corruption and it's cheaper, I probably would.
Right, just pay the troll toll and do what you want.
Yeah. I mean, how is that any different than living in a democracy? It's the same thing. Like in the United States of America, it's illegal for people to own machine guns, but it's not, though. Actually, if you pay enough money, you can.
Yes,
you can just get an FFL with an SOT and now you can have as many machine guns as you want.
Right.
Oh, you can't just fly a plane whenever you want to. Actually,
but if you pay some money, you can.
You can. If I buy a big enough piece of land and own the airspace over it, I actually can. And who's going to stop me? You know, there are people wealthy enough to just build. Theoretically, you could build your own space station and no one can stop you if you have enough money and resources to do it.
Yeah. What are they going to do?
Yeah. And all that the government does is provide extra toll fees to do it. You know, nothing is carte blanche necessarily illegal. You want to kill people? The government will provide you ways to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Join the military. There's jobs. Go become an executioner. The government will let you kill certain people.
Right.
They'll pay you to do it.
They'll bring them to you and pay you. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what really is illegal? Really? Nothing. It just depends on how much money you're willing to pay.
Mm-hmm.
To the same institution that everyone touts as the reason... You know, all it does is enforce some sort of, it enforces the same kind of inequality that people want to get away from, which is also just naturally existing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same inequality exists in a democracy as in a dictatorship as in an anarchy, you just kind of put a different troll in the way. In an anarchy, the troll is anyone. Anybody who's willing to step up can theoretically stop you. And at least in that way, you're fair, because it's an equal opportunity for anybody to just say, you know what? I'm not having that, you know, and y'all are going to go figure it out. In a democracy, it's one step removed. We all got together and agreed that you're not going to do that, which, by the way, is how it could also go in an anarchy. You can just get enough people together.
We all can get together and make you not do that. Yeah,
sure. You know, and weirdly, just like in a democracy, you're just worried about offending the same people. You just don't want to bother enough people. In a dictatorship, it might be a little worse. You just got to upset one person, the wrong person, and then you may have a bunch of people come after you. But also, other side of the coin, all you got to do is get on one person's good side and you can do whatever you want. You know, it's the same thing. You're just changing how many people you can upset and in what order. You know, you don't ultimately eliminate the problem, I don't think, which is that people with more can do more, which just makes sense. It just, and I don't think you can ever change that, you know.
No, people with more can do more. The only way that you can make that not matter is to make there be no people with more.
By giving one person more, usually. Because someone's got to be in charge to lead the movement. So they got to have a little bit more to start the movement.
Comrade.
Which I think leads me to my next point. It doesn't just have to be one person seeking power and taking it politically necessarily, like in examples of Caesar and Hitler. You can also do it ideologically. And I think that that's an interesting way to look at it as well. If you look at some of the longest lasting the longest lasting monarchies, they all are backed by a religious institution. You know, which is an ideology. They're ideologically hold the place that they do. And I think there's a key reason why we don't, that's the differentiating factor between a dictator and a monarch is whether or not they're backed by a religious institution. I know there's probably more differences, but that's the main reason they're different, is that technically the monarch's not making all the decisions. They're just doing what the god of that religion that they also happen to be in charge of.
Really, the only difference is that they wear a shiny hat.
Yeah, and they're touted as being, you know, special and traditional, and
it's traditional, yes,
yeah, and highness, you know, which is a fun word when you it's very blatantly obvious. Higher than what? Oh, you,
everyone else. Yeah,
why do you get to be in charge? Because I'm more special. I'm more equal than everyone else.
And majestic also, because
yes, and majestic, and you're welcome for being in my presence. But ideology goes both ways. You can use ideology to keep a dictatorship in existence, and you can also use ideology to tear one down and create a new one, which I think is kind of what you see go on with, you know, communism is obviously one. It's like one of the biggest ones. But you kind of see it in religions too. Like if you look at a lot of the groups that try to break off and topple things, you know, like one hot take that a lot of people have is that America is like a religiously driven, like an ideologically driven democracy around Christianity. And that's why they do the things that they do. I don't know if I buy that, to be honest, because while there are a lot of Christians in the United States, I don't know.
The whole society ideologically driven by Christianity? No.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
I think the main thing you could point at in evidence of that is that it is political suicide to be an out atheist.
Yeah.
Or anything not a Christian, really.
Yeah.
That's probably the only real thing you have to point to say that the United States is ideologically driven by Christianity. But I'm pretty well convinced that most politicians are not real Christians. They say that because it's part of the dance that they do. And they're all used to dancing and telling lies to get into power.
Sure. It's almost a prerequisite.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of a shame too, because I feel like that's another thing democracy incentivizes. And realistically, monarchies too. You don't need all the things that a monarch has to just do what a monarch does, but it's legitimizing. You know, for the same reason that like the Catholic Church is looked at and so legitimized, there's a reason cathedrals look the way they do. There is a psychological effect that elegance and...
Yeah, big stone buildings, fancy uniforms, yeah.
Pipe organs.
Yes.
Like, that's, the to me, the biggest example of, like, just how psychologically dominating a church can be. Because pipe organs have been around for a long time. And it's... They're still impressive. If you, dear listener, have never seen a full pipe organ, like, not like the little ones that you can buy. I mean, like, one that it's actually a fundamental part of the structure of the building.
Right. The building is the instrument. Yeah.
Yeah. Go listen to one. It's unreal. And the only thing that I can liken it to is a concert with electronic amplifiers and speakers. Like, it's an overwhelming force of sound, but you had that 1,000 years ago when there's nothing else that can compete. Nothing is as loud, nothing is as all-encompassing as that.
Powered by slavery.
Yeah,
usually
powered by slavery piously. You know,
piously, as most slavery is.
And you know, like, you can take, you know, like, I'm an atheist, right? Mm-hmm. But I'll even be honest, like, it would be a lot harder for me to walk into a Catholic church to argue with a Catholic priest.
If the pipe organ was playing?
Well, no, just if it was in the church, than if I walked into, like, a, you know, a Southern Baptist church in a strip mall.
Sure.
Because we can't help but feel like,
oh, wow, these people take themselves seriously. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, wow, this is serious. All of the stuff in here is old as crap. All of this in here looks expensive and is well maintained. And it is very clear that a bunch of people revere this place and it is sacred to them. And that's contagious. You know, another good example, you walk into someone's house and you're looking at the stuff on their mantelpiece and you see a jar and you think, oh, that's a neat jar. And they tell you it's ashes.
Mm.
So what? To me, that's no different than any other ashes. But because it's important to them, it now becomes the most important thing on that mantelpiece. That if it were to collapse, I would reach out and try to save that thing more than anything else. Even though it doesn't matter. It's ash. You can sweep it into a different jar. You know, it's contagious. When someone takes something as sacred, you kind of also contagiously respect the thing more if you respect the person. But that's also when you imply that on mass. Like, if you walk into a church and there's hundreds of people there praying in silence, even the most anti-Christian atheist out there will find it hard to break that silence because it's the peer pressure. And all of those things reinforce and amplify that peer pressure. It's like a zone debuff on resilience. You know what I mean? And monarchies do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Dictators do the same thing. How many dictators have you seen with an egregious number of medals on their chest? like how many times have you seen, like, a Chinese military parade where the guy has, like, to have an extra bit of jacket stapled onto the bottom with more medals on it? Just to
make more room for his medals, yeah.
Yeah. And then the leader always has to stand out and look different. And how do they do that when everyone's adorned with a crap ton of medals? They dress plain, but not the same. Like, look at the Chairman Mao outfit.
Mm-hmm.
The worker's jacket, because he was, you know, workers of the world unite, sits different, you know. Kim Jong-un, the same way. He just dresses in a black jacket and slacks. But it's terrifying when he's surrounded by all these people with all these medals on their chest, even though half of them are starving to death. You know, we weirdly respect that kind of crap. And the people who can concentrate that kind of stuff tend to be in government buildings, you know? And our government buildings, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of them evoke the same things. They all have this Roman architecture, which has this kind of, oh, gravitas to them, mm-hmm. You know? Like, when you look at the U.S. Capitol building, it's not just a metal building with a bunch of things in it, even though that would probably be way cheaper and more efficient to build.
Sure.
It's also not just a brick building that just looks like every other brick building. It's rectangular. It's fine. Even though it costs way more
giant
money.
Giant columns of stone.
domes.
Yes, big domes.
Big domes with golden things on top. Everything's white. You know, the White House, marble or whatever, plaster, you know. Yeah, it's all to kind of give this kind of false sense of legitimacy. But it's effective. Because the only thing that makes it false legitimacy is you, me not thinking that it is.
Mm-hmm.
But to everyone else, if you think it's legit.
And it is.
It's become legitimate. Congratulations, you know. And yeah, and politicians are the same way. You know, everyone has these ideas about like what a leader should be, you know. Like I distinctly remember there was a lot of people who complained about. Like, there have been several political leaders in recent history that people complained about being not very presidential or statesly.
What does that even mean?
They just don't evoke the feeling of a president. That's what it means.
Yes. I understand literally what it means, but what does that mean, though? Yeah.
It's a good question. What does it mean? Well, they're not a gentleman.
What does that mean?
They're not a lordly, like, person. What does that mean?
Meaningless words.
Meaningless words, but you know what I mean. Like, you could see it if I showed it to you. Like, if I showed it to you and said, is this statesly? Is this presidential? You could probably tell me whether something was or not. Like, if I showed you a picture of a president shoving a Big Mac in his mouth.
Yes, very impressive.
Is that very presidential?
Yes.
I mean, to you, maybe, but a lot of people would be like, that's not very presidential.
Well, I saw Donald Trump do it, so.
Literally. But you're right. Like, technically, it is. It
is a thing that a president has done.
But it all goes back, I think, to the class structure. It's all classist at that, mm-hmm. at some point, you know? And it harkens back to the monarchy, who is supposed to be sitting at the very top of the aristocracy, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that's, I guess, another thing. Very democratic people kind of have that tendency to have a lot of respect for things that are weirdly conservative. And I think that's why it's weird. People who are like super, super, uber duper pro-democracy are like the weirdest blend of progressive and conservative at the mm-hmm. same time.
Yeah.
It's almost impressive how they're able to balance that, you know, continuum in their head. Oh, man. So I guess the question is like, is there really any way to prevent that? You know, is there any way to prevent people from devolving down into like some kind of dictatorship? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Yeah, I think there are too many compelling forces in that direction, mm-hmm. and it's just I think the only thing that you can do is have some sort of release valve that when things get too bad, try to find a less ugly way back out.
Yeah. It's almost like, because the fear. The great fear, I think, is not a sudden shift into that, because that's not very common. That's very easy to see coming, I think, most of the time, and it spurns opposition, right? Any too quick movement politically is going to drag the opposition up to the same level, you know? Like, civil wars are weirdly probably one of the best ways to try to stop tyranny, but also one of the fastest ways to ensure you get one as well. It just depends on who wins, and sometimes not even that.
Mm-hmm.
It depends, because even if you're fighting a civil war, because arguably, like, most revolutions were civil wars at the time. Like, the American Revolution was actually a civil war, technically. We don't call it that because of the way it turned out. But if we had failed, mm-hmm. it would have been called that. It would have been called a revolt, you know, a civil revolt, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. It's the slow, gradual degradation, I think, that eventually gets you there, for yeah. sure. And, like, you see it with Rome, bread and circuses. Just the slow, inevitable decline into a dictatorship that maybe has the legs to keep it going or not. And then you get conquered. You know, that's usually the way it ends up.
Mm-hmm.
You stop existing, and then someone else comes in and does their thing, you know? It's a good way to introduce us. I think the solution to this is not to put in a policy, because if you look at all the things that have been tried, it's all about putting in policies that should not be changed and warped, right? You know, there's either a religious institution where it's like a religious law that has to stay in place, or in the United States, it's like our constitution, you know, like the constitution is the biggest bulwark against tyranny, because it's just, even though it's just a document that says you can't do this, it's held in such high esteem and it's unchanging mostly that it shouldn't be easy to, and it's not easy to change. That should stop tyranny as much as possible. But I almost feel like a system built to intentionally be cyclical might be a way you can get away with it.
Hmm.
Like a system that actually intentionally divulges into tyranny on a schedule that everyone knows, just to remind people of what it is, because that's usually what happens.
This is the year of martial law.
I mean, what's wrong with that? You know, I think the closest example is something like another system that had two leaders, and we'll finish up with this one. But I think Historia Civilis does a video on this one too. The Greek Spartan dual monarchy
mm-hmm.
system with oligarchy, which, by the way, most democracies end up as oligarchies actually, but it depends on where you draw the line. How much is a small group, you know? Mm-hmm. They had a system similar where they essentially would elect like five people to do the lawmaking. You had five people whose job it was to do that. And then at the end of the year, when their terms were over, the first thing that happened is they were immediately put on trial by the next five that were elected, and they didn't get to help pick the next five. And they could be punished for anything that they did afterwards, mm-hmm. right? And one of the interesting things is the flexibility that system provides is times when it's like, yeah, for a year, no matter what, like, it does not matter if we are at war.
You are in charge. You can do whatever you want. You can shape society however you see fit, but you will be held accountable at the end of the term.
Mm-hmm. And you get people used to that. I don't know. That might be a way to look at it, is a system that intentionally, it gives people all the power they need to do the things you want them to do and all the license to do the things that you don't. But then you hold them accountable. You actually hold them accountable. I do not consider losing a re-election accountability.
No.
But people think that it is. Oh, well, what's the consequence if I do this? Oh, you don't get to keep doing it.
Oh, you're unemployed.
Well, no, I'm not.
But not really, because you can immediately find some different thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah. You just can't do this no more. But I don't get punished. No, you're fine. We'll put someone else in there. Oh, cool. Then I'll just do whatever I can to get away with as much as I can until I get caught. And then I'm slandered out of office. But then I get to go work as a consultant for the next guy.
Right, but I'm rich, so.
Who cares? Yeah. I made my money. I'm good. I don't know. Maybe a topic worth expanding on sometime in the future.
Perhaps.
But for now, I think that that's all we've got.
Mm-hmm.
Philosophers.
If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.